I think the way we're going to do this is going to be a little easier for David, from a, as long as you don't tear up our microphone, and you have to, whatever you tear up, you have to pay for. Anyway, but we're grateful for what God's done in David's life. Clearly, this has not been an easy journey for any of us. I was joking with him the other day. I said, I'm tired of driving to see you in Boone, and maybe we can hang out here. But we talked about this some Friday. What we're going to do is we're going to start out. I want him to tell you a little bit about his salvation experience that started several years ago. Then we're going to lead from there to some other places. We're going to leave out some big, there's no way we can deal with every event between in that time that we have up here tonight, so we're going to try to give you some big highlights and try to tell you a little bit about what God does. David, tell us about your salvation a little bit.
First off, I bet you wish you could pack the house like this on Sunday night.
Cut his microphone off every time he says something stupid out there. Whenever he talks like that, cut his microphone off.
Nah, I got Ricky back there.
I'm changing my sermon next Sunday morning.
No, salvation, it's actually odd. It's 7 years this weekend. It was September 9th, 2007. I think we just finished up doing one of those Sunday night summers, and my boys J.J. Vanderford and I think Bowman were giving testimonies that night. And oddly enough, I never sit on that left-hand side, but I was sitting right where Brandon's sitting. And anybody who's been called, they get that feeling. And you know when he's calling you to come on down. And, you know, I'm going to skip around a little bit, but I was telling Mel, ironically enough, at Hebron, oddly enough, I sat right there in that row the whole time, and it wasn't until like week eight or something like that that I started putting two and two together and saying, wow, here I am sitting in the exact same row, and sat there every day that I was there, so it was weird. But no, that's when I accepted the Lord as my Savior, and right off the get-go, it was fine. I enjoyed it. I was living life. I was, daily devotions. I was in my Bible study. I remember countless days calling up Mel and throwing something else at her that I had learned in Bible studies, and to kind of breeze through it. I remember stayed real active in church. I remember joining every committee I could. I wanted to kind of discipline myself more to do daily Bible study. That's why I had asked and accepted getting into Sunday school with Justin. That was tough, but it was a learning experience, and I enjoyed it, and hopefully I'll get back to that. But I stayed strong for a long time. I was, if you didn't know, I ran the service departments at the dealerships in Asheboro, the Nissan, Honda, and Dodge. And stayed strong in my walk for probably 10 years of the 12 years I stayed there. I was able to run things the way I felt like service departments should be run. Anytime you mention a dealership or something like that, you always got that crooked appearance. I think Scott's probably learned some of that since I left, but I was always real honest. I always kept everything going.
All right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
We talked about a few weeks ago when all this kind of come to a head. I got off an airplane from Portland to Charlotte. My phone lit up like a Christmas tree when I cut it back on about what had happened and all that kind of stuff, and which ultimately led me to going to David's house the next day after I talked to the deacons. And he knows about all this stuff too. We've talked about this. Talked to all the deacons. I said, I'm going to ask him to resign tomorrow morning. But this has to take place before Sunday. Me and him talked about it. We're not mad about this. So we went and talked to him. And I said to him that day, I said, David, I have two responsibilities here. Number one, I'm the pastor of this corporate entity. I have a responsibility to take care of this entity. But at the same time, I'm your pastor. And I want to help you. But as your pastor, I want you to hear me what I'm saying to you. I don't know where it was at, and I don't know when it was, but at some point you left the Lord. David looked at me kind of sheepishly that day, you remember, and said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, okay, that's fine, but you still have to step down. And which a few weeks ago, he told me he remembers that time. Now, David, why don't you tell us a little bit about when you've done well for those years. At some point, you recognized when you left the Lord. The Lord didn't leave you.
Absolutely not. And it was probably more of a turning my back on him than walking away from him. But that day that Scott came to the house, I'd been home. I think it was the next morning after I was arrested. I remember Scott and JJ coming by, and he asked me that, or told me that. He goes, you need to go back and find the time when you turned your back on God. And it's from that point forward that you can get better. And I was still clouded in the head. I was still pretty much at the pinnacle of an addiction. So thought-wise and brain-wise, you couldn't think of anything. Everything was just still a cloud. It didn't take long. At Hebron, it was probably my first week or so that I remembered quickly the first time. And if anybody doesn't know my addiction, I was addicted to pain pills that I received from one of my employees, the medicine that I ended up getting addicted to. But I still wasn't clear in my head. It still didn't land. Saying, okay, that was it in my life. That's where I got to start from and go forward. Mel and I talked a lot about it, thought a lot about it on the mountain. You have a lot of time to do that. But I started realizing, you know, those first 10 years, everything was going fine. My owner ended up having his son come back to the company. And once his son kind of came in, things started getting a little bit more about making that every dollar count, getting in every little service that you could. If you broke something, you would basically tell the customer, hey, look what I also found, you know, instead of admitting up to us breaking it, things like that. That started weighing on me. I started taking on more responsibility because at the same time that we were doing that, you were kind of losing business, which meant I was losing money, which led to stress of losing money because you still want to have the things you have in life. So I can name off 50 things that'll turn somebody from the Lord. You know, we're taught, you know, the love of money is the root of all of it. When you have the money and you start losing the money and you want the money, that becomes the love, and that leads to the stress. And it led to the day that, I remembered one of my employees I just recently hired offering me a pain pill. I didn't know what it was at that time. But yeah, it took all my sorrows away for the moment. It took all my stress away for the moment. And when you stop and look back, you don't realize X amount of time has went by. But next thing you know, I'm waking up realizing I'm looking for this stuff. Looking for the stuff led to basically doing whatever it took to get the stuff. I won't go into the pinnacle of it all, but yeah, you start doing a lot of soul checking at that point in time, because you know you're not the person that you once were. Lie, cheat, steal, cut people as far as friendships, you do whatever it takes at that point. So it's nothing I'm by no means proud of, but am forgiven. So
absolutely. After that happened, as you're most of you are aware, David was ultimately arrested and kind of hit rock bottom then. And it was not a good time for me. It was not a good time for anybody. Because after I left David that day, I went and told Melody what I'd done. I said, and she was okay. She wasn't okay. I guess that's the right word. She wasn't mad at me. She understood why I'd done what I'd done. But at the same time, I told David, I said, we need to get you some help. There's some help out there. And I don't think you have to do it through a 30-day treatment program that's non-biblical. I think there's biblical. God's word gives us help. At least we get too spiritual. We all have struggles with different areas in our lives. That just happens to be his.
Was, right.
Past tense, right. Right. He's going to talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes, but we're not defined by those things that we used to be. So it led us to, it's weird how I could tell you some stuff that I can't talk about publicly about. I got David into a Christian counselor, him and Melody. The only time I got mad at him was when I realized that he was still having some issues with the addiction then. And I got a little mad at him that day. Melody didn't know how mad I got it with him. I started to leave his butt in Monroe. But that helped us get started to the place of Hebron. David, this is wild. Don't you listen to what I'm telling you. David was told it would take 10 weeks to get in, 8 to 10 weeks, right? Tell us the story about getting into Hebron.
You took me down to Lee Pig's church. I had a counselor down there that runs a program called the Provision House, and he kind of does a 6-step in-house counseling program. But Scott had also mentioned this place, Hebron Colony. I had looked it up online. Struck me as odd that it was free of charge to attend. But it was every bit a Christian-based facility. At the time, free of charge sounded a lot better than the prices you were seeing at a lot of these secular rehabs. But I definitely knew I wanted help. I needed help. We went down and talked to this gentleman. And yes, Scott got a little huffy. But, you know, I think Paul explained it also. It's not a cold turkey thing. You might have all these cry outs in your head that you want to stop and you want to do this, but after a certain point, the addiction's what's in control of you, not what you want. But he told me more about Hebron. He told me that he had spent 5 weeks there while trying to develop his counseling agency, and he said he thought it would be a good fit for me. He told me the process. I had to call. Get an application from Hebron. Once I got the application in, there was a few tests that I had to take, send it back in, and you get put on this 8 to 10 week waiting period to get in. We did that as soon as we got home. They faxed it in to me. Yeah, got the application, filled it out. I actually overnighted it back to them. Called the next day and. It took, I was starting to get real angry there for a minute. It took about 2 or 3 days for them to finally respond back to me and tell me I had to have several kinds of blood tests work. I forget what they are HIV. Now, TB, HIV, and I thought I was going to have to get a Hep C, but I didn't use needles or anything like that. So that got a little worrisome. I remember calling Scott upset about that because there was about a 2-3 week hold or delay in getting results back on that. So meanwhile, I was fighting, you know, my desire to keep doing what I was doing. Actually, probably not making Melody the most pleasant person in the world during that time either, but I was getting very frustrated because I knew in my head that I needed to get somewhere and get somewhere quick because here I was still looking, still searching, still conniving to get what I wanted, but it was odd. It was actually a week and 3 days from the time that they received my application to getting a call to come in there, and the rest is it's all God moments.
For instance, one God moment. They told us it would take 2 to 3 weeks to get the HIV test back. He got it back in 2 days.
2 days.
God moment. God moment. That Friday, they called him and said, could you come tomorrow?
He actually had called me Thursday. I had called to check in. One of the ways they wanted you to be serious about the program was you needed to call check in weekly with them. And it kind of helped you stay at the top of the list. I remember talking to RD, one of the pastors there. He runs the admissions, and he told me, he said he had a few things going on. He had asked me where Siler City was in relation to Boone. I told him how long it would probably take, and then he told me to call him back the next day. I remember based off that conversation, it sounded pretty obvious that I was going to be going quick, because I called Melody and said, if I'm not mistaken, based on what I just heard, you know, tomorrow I'll probably get told that I'm coming. I called Friday, got his voicemail. Sure enough, he called me back. He said, are you anxious to come? And I said, I'm ready to come. A young kid had been there a week. He was just married, and his new wife came up there and picked him up after a week. So an opening happened. It was a last-minute thing. So he said, he asked me, it was Friday at like 3 o'clock or something, if I could be there next morning by 9:30, or it was 9 to 11, something like that. And I said, absolutely. So the plan was set. Everything else, it was weird, because I thought then, I remember calling Mel. She was quiet at that point, because it became reality that I was fixing to leave for 10 weeks. I hated the fact the boys weren't there, so I couldn't tell them. I want to say they were doing the day camp at Jan's. I think that was going on. But then, oddly enough, I'm pulling in my parking lot at the house as soon as I hang up the phone, and Jan pulls in with both the boys, which was odd. I don't think they were supposed to have been back yet. As soon as they get out of the truck, out of her vehicle, I said, come on, let's go for a ride. So I told them about it. I remember calling my dad to see if he could get me up there. His schedule worked out perfect to where he was like, great, I'll work an afternoon shift. I'll take you up there in the morning. And that was it. I made it to Hebron on June 14th.
Don't you listen to what's funny is when you go to Hebron, you're there voluntarily. Everybody that's there has been volunteers to be there. When you get there, you have to be clean, pretty much.
No, you got to be clean.
But they drug test you on that Saturday. And if you're not clean, they will send you home. David seen several guys over the 10 weeks he was there. They come on Saturday that were put back in the car and sent back right back down the mountain and not allowed to stay.
Yeah, when me and my dad showed up, they have greeters, just a bunch of the guys that are there. They'll get picked to greet the newcomers that week. But I think we no more pulled in the parking spot, and the guys came up and shook hands, this and that, asked who I was, make sure I was one of the guys. And then, basically left my dad down there, left all my luggage down there, and they take you up there. And, they're saying hey to you as they're walking into the bathroom. but they drug test you right there on the spot. They sit you in this little chair, and you're just sitting there waiting for one of the pastors to come by and give the thumbs up. Once I got the thumbs up, then they come out, grab luggage, and that was it. That started it. I can jump into the...
Well, his first 2 weeks, he can't have any company except me.
Yeah, no phone calls, no visitation. I learned real quick. It took about 2 days. The next day, Sunday, I realized... You know, I'd never went. Yeah, it was Father's Day, too. The kids stashed a Father's Day card that cut me down. But you realize real quick that as a parent, as a husband, you don't go a day without talking to your family. And that was the reality check.
I went to see David a week and a half in. I come back and said, at Bible school, I said, he's okay. We'll talk more about that as we press on a little bit. But it's funny, David, to tell you this, and tell them about what they tell you. Basically, you said if you don't want to hear about,
They tell you as soon as you get there, they introduce you to everybody at 12 o'clock at lunchtime. We have some weird. I always called it the cattle call. They'd ring a bell, and here comes all the guys into the room. But they'd introduce you as the new guys. But then at 1 o'clock, you had your orientation. And one of the first things they tell you is, you know, that they honestly believe that it was, it's by God's divine appointment that, we're there. And that they ask us for our commitment for 10 weeks. And that if we didn't like Jesus, then we weren't going to like that place, because that's all they did. And we got a lot of it. I'll definitely be telling you more about the day-to-day.
I want you to tell the folks, David, about a day at Hebron, what that looked like. Like, most of our days start at a normal time, and what we kind of dictate our day, but David's day was kind of dictated for him there. Well, that's why I'm saying that to you, is that once you're there, although he's a grown man, he's there willingly, he forfeits a lot of his rights that you and I have every day while there. So tell him about that, David.
Yeah.
But what's your schedule look like, is what I mean by that.
Schedule-wise, we were up at 6. They had these like school bells there that they would sound off at 6 o'clock, get everybody up. We had to be in the dining room at 7.
Tell them about breakfast.
For roll call. They'd count you. We'd pray up. We'd get our breakfast. It was delicious. It was rough, I ain't gonna lie. It was rough stuff. But then we had, once everybody was seated and we were eating, every man had to stand up one at a time and do their memory verse. We just had this little book that had the 70 days that we were there. Each day we had a memory verse that we had to recite. You were given grace your first 3-4 days, being new there. After that, if you messed up, you learned it real quick. You got an essay, and it was usually about that verse in the chapter that it was in. After everybody got done with their verses, we would read our daily bread. We'd have discussion time, and we would get out of there right at about 7:45, 7:50. We'd all stand up, and we'd all do the Lord's Prayer together. Everybody got their 10 minutes to do smoking or dipping. We would head to the chapel. We had to be in the chapel at 8 o'clock. From 8 to 10, it was preaching. It was Bible, basically Sunday school, we'd call it, but it was Bible study.
You think I'm long-winded. 2 hours.
Yeah, and it was nonstop. The director, he held that one, but that was Monday through Friday, 8 to 10. As soon as we got out of that, we would go up to what's called the day room, and I've got some pictures to show you later, but the day room, we'd have muster, and everybody would get told what their jobs were. The place is self-sustained, so they capitalize on all the skills that the guys have there to run everything. We'd usually work till about 11:30 at that point. We'd break for lunch. You'd have to be there. You get counted. And then once lunch was over, you continued working until about 4:30. Then you got to stop. We'd have supper. And then after supper, you were in chapel from 6:20 to 8:20 for another service. And then a few days, like a Wednesday, a Thursday, things like that, you'd have a mandatory movie. There was a fun day in there. And then the weekends, nothing but chapel services. You'd have your graduation service on Saturday nights, which was whoever's graduating that week, followed by testimonies. And then Sunday was a two-hour service at 9, and then 9 to 11, and then 6 to 8 at night.
I don't ever want to hear none of y'all say I'm long-winded again. None of y'all, ever. While David was there, it's kind of interesting. David began to, I think he got the job by default. He was one of that 2 or 3 of them that had a driver's license.
Yeah.
He got to be the trash man. To start with, though, his original job was he was cleaning up behind those guys in that day room.
I was in the house crew, yeah.
Then, he didn't like cleaning up by himself.
I kept the mop in my hand. I didn't venture into the bathrooms. Not at all.
Let me give you a little picture here. David, correct me if I'm wrong. You're talking about 35 to 40 men that live there. Men who have obviously made wise choices, men who are either alcohol dependent and or drug dependent. Many of them, like David's roommate, before he got there, was homeless, right?
Yeah.
He actually didn't do well when he left. He went back to some of the same people that he was with before that got him there, which is not wise. David was... Tell him a little bit about the discipline stuff. I think this will be kind of lightening up a little bit about the essays, because I was picking at you about having to write essays.
Yeah, everything was an essay. during the orientation, they would go over the rules. One of the biggest rules was your bedroom. I was fortunate. I had just a two-man room with our own bathroom. Most guys had four-man rooms, one bathroom. But real quick, every morning while we were in chapel, one of the staff members would go in and they would check everybody's room. And just to hit a few of these, it says if the bathroom or hall door is closed, there goes a letter grade. If it's a B, you got a warning. And the next day, if you got a B, you got an essay. If it was anything less than that, it was an automatic essay. It didn't matter if you were a neat freak and your roommate was a messy guy. They all got the essay. So if the lights were left on, any of the lights left on, a bathroom fan, that was a letter grade gone. Let's see, window left open, letter grade. Beds not made, that was an automatic essay. Floor not clean, automatic essay. Counters and sinks dirty, it's a letter grade. If the mirror's not clean, letter grade. Trash not emptied, automatic essay. Toilet not flushed, automatic essay.
Some of the ladies are saying amen.
But yeah, your room being messy, dusty, nothing stored under the bed, and they stuck to it.
Like, me and Chad went up to see him one day, and Chad was saying that some of the rules, like, there could be no mouthwash, there could be no... cologne, there could be no...
no Axe body spray, things
no
like that.
No Axe body spray. All that stuff has alcohol in it. And you can't keep any of that in your room. It's like jail. In order to get an Advil, David had to get that to the office because that was kept on behind lock and key in the office. And if you ask for two, they won't use...
Oh, yeah, they get you. I remember I got a bad habit of just asking for aspirin. I mean, I don't care if it's ibuprofen or not. I just aspirin, give me... I got a headache, you know? And... we had just gotten finished with a softball game, and I had a heat headache. And we had the sweetest little lady behind the counter. But I remember going up to the window and asking her, I was like, can I get two aspirin? And she just looked at me like I'd killed somebody and was like, well, had we ever given you aspirin before? And I was like, I don't know, you know? And she's like, well, that's a lot. And I'm like, well, it's just... you know, two aspirin, right? And she's like, well, yeah. And she starts looking through the list here, and I was like, ma'am, I just have a headache. I'm just hoping that it'll go away. And she's like, well, we'll give it to you this time, but I might have you talk to a pastor. And I'm like, but yeah, it was, they didn't cut you any slack. I didn't know what you'd do with aspirin. But.
One of the funny things was is that they had a smoking and a dipping area. As many of the guys there do smoke, and some of them, like knucklehead here, still dips. But when they said that was confined to that area, they meant?
Yeah, you would get an essay. I mean, you could, it's just rock little islands. We had one that was probably the length of this aisle here, and then the one down at my house was probably about four pews thick. But if you were standing on the sidewalk with a dip in your mouth or still smoking a cigarette and staff walked by, they'd get you. If you got caught, it was an automatic 7 days without your tobacco. You got caught a second time, it was gone for the rest of your stay. They'd give essays. They gave essays if, especially on the dip users, because it's just a habit to have a dip and kind of walk away, to walk off the spot with it. And to learn to tuck it pretty good.
I won't tell you who, but I carried somebody up there with me that took him some dip. I like to have a heart attack. I tell you what's funny is that when Mel would go on the weekends, we talked about this some, and they would actually go through the stuff that Melody brought to make sure that she did not bring alcohol or tobacco on that facility. When I went, they never searched my stuff, but they always stopped me and they said, "Pastor, we know you're the pastor. Is there any alcohol or drugs in that stuff that you brought here?" I said, "No, you're welcome to go through it." He said, "I'm going to trust you. You're the pastor. But don't lie to me." And the guy turned around and walked off. When we brought stuff to him, the care packages, David would leave it on his bed. I said, "Why don't you put it up?" He said, "I can't. They have to come in behind me, behind you, and go through it piece by piece to make sure that it is indeed Doritos and it is Mountain Dew or whatever." To tell you a little bit about Hebron. Hebron's been there, what, David?
68 years.
It was birthed out of a guy's burden for folks in Charlotte, North Carolina. They were so burdened to see those guys drunks and just ruining their lives with the alcohol. And he wanted to create a place where they could come get clean. But not get clean the way the world gets clean, but get clean by the gospel. So it was kind of evolved from just the alcohol to the drugs now too. They operate, don't you hear what I'm just saying to you, on a $1.3 million budget by faith. Absolutely by faith. They receive no government funds. They receive no assistance at all. When David talks about their self-supporting, they have their own water treatment system there. They have a garden. How large is that garden?
A little over 3 acres.
He was really grateful he didn't put on his his application in coming that he done gardening and stuff, because the guys who put that were put on the garden crew. Trouble is they don't work with tillers. They work with hoes.
Yeah.
And and that's what they do all day long.
They don't get to eat it. They sell it.
And they sell that stuff in order to make money. They have two thrift stores, one in Boone, one in somewhere in Tennessee.
Mountain City.
Mountain City, Tennessee, which they sell that stuff that people give to try to raise about a third of their budget, but the rest of it is given through the generosity of guys like David who went there and done well for themselves. There are some independent people, business people that give back to it, and there's many churches that give back to it on a monthly and an annually basis in order to help them. coming on. I want you to talk a little bit about the Bible studies and the stuff that you were telling me about, telling me and Chad and even Ethan when we went, about the Bible studies that you were doing on your own. I don't necessarily want you to give us the whole rundown of all that stuff, because we're going to be limited on time. But I want you to tell us a little bit about the Bible studies and what God done there with the Bible studies and that you were doing. I know that you could show some of that stuff possibly, maybe.
Yeah.
You got pages and pages of that stuff.
They give you, during orientation, they give you a pretty intensive Bible study, and it's about 70 pages, and it hits on everything from prayer, justification, redemption, sanctification, sin, the doctrine of sin. I mean, it just runs through everything. I was comfortable with that. I did become a little bit of an overachiever and finish early, so they quickly introduce you to other books of the Bible, Bible studies. I'm a master at Proverbs. I can do that book real well. But Bible study in itself helped me a lot, because I kept talking about how, you know, when it's happening, you don't realize how much you're truly walking away from the Lord and losing a lot of that enlightenment that you have from them. But there at the end, I mean, if one of my kids was probably asking me a question about the Bible or a Bible story, I probably wouldn't have been able to help them. So as I started diving into that, and you're in the Word every single day, the Bible study itself probably helped me the most, because you're around other guys. A lot of them never even heard the Word when they came there. But when guys started asking questions and was looking for answers, and those things started coming back to me, and I've never been an answer giver. I'll tell you where it's at. We'll read it. We'll get to that point, you know, and we'll discuss it and get you your answer. that really started helping me to get stronger. I started started having a lot of guys that would do that. Had one guy, me and him really didn't see eye to eye early on. We got separated.
That's his first night.
Days, yeah. didn't take much early on. He said something. I think it was innocent now that I look back at it, but it was just something about wanting to meet my wife that struck me wrong. So, but that was my only warning while I was there. So he actually ended up coming and asking me questions, and when that started happening, and I started feeling myself getting stronger, you started seeing a lot of who I know as myself coming back. I felt bad for those garden guys. So one of the things about being the trash guy is you had one of the only vehicles on the campus. It was your vehicle. You drove it everywhere. So I'd haul them down there. I'd get them their coolers of water. I'd go and pick them up so they didn't have to walk that much of the mountain to get back up there. But all that still, I want to kind of kick back because this was big. It was the forgiveness part. I struggled real early on, you know, knowing that I had to ask God for forgiveness. And at the time, I thought I was. I'd go to the altar. I'd spend a lot of time in the chapel at the altar, and I'd pray and ask him to forgive me. But I was just basically saying the overall sin. Let's say theft. You know, Lord, forgive me for stealing. But when you'd walk away from it, you still didn't feel free from it. It took a little bit to realize that in every sin we all commit, there's 10, 12, 15 sins that make up that one sin. And it wasn't until I realized, you know, the wicked thoughts in your heart, the being deceitful, the plotting, the planning, the scheming, the lying, the cheating, all that goes into the one sin that you're asking for forgiveness on. Once I kind of realized that and was asking for those things to be forgiven, I felt that burden lift off me. It never bothered me again. I was worried at one point about being able to forgive myself for it. But I knew that if I could forgive myself, I knew there was no reason I needed to be there. I didn't need Jesus at that point. So I quickly hushed that up. I'm ashamed. You know, I'm not proud of the things I did, but Melody still struggles with that. She knows I still put a lot of that on me, but I know that'll get better. But I grew strong. I was touched at graduation. You don't realize a lot of things that you did for people was really realized. It was a lot of what's taught here, helping others, shut-ins. I mean, if our guys were sick, I was the one that would go get the meals and take them to their rooms and get their drinks and stuff like that. And I never looked for an applause or that a boy or anything like that. I didn't think anything of it. But I had a bunch of guys stand up during graduation and comment on that stuff and kind of helped me realize I was back. I was tender for the last few weeks. Scott dropping that bombshell on me my first weekend back to come up here and say something.
I give you a heads up before church started.
And he just mama threw up right there.
Yeah.
But speaking of the church, tell them, what was the number of the final cards and letters you received from here? What was the final number? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. 48 families here wrote me 64 cards. This is a big part, and I love everybody. But yeah, that's Moon's Chapel right there.
Amen.
Big time.
You're to be commended for that. Here's the thing. When mail call came, it became a joke at Hebron College.
Yeah, they'd call David Toy's name in a heartbeat.
So many of those guys have nothing to go back to. They have no church family. They have no one who cares. who's going to be look after them long term. I shared with you through the whole journey. He didn't need you to tell him he was in a ditch. He got that. We need to help him get out of the ditch. You're to be commended. I appreciate that as your pastor. I went to see him 3 times. My second trip there, I went and I come back and said, David's good. Third trip, I took Chad, and Chad was just absolutely amazed. I think that's a good word, isn't it? And what he saw, he said, that's not the same young man that I saw leave here 7 weeks ago. I said, no, he's not. It was just exciting to see what God was doing there in his life and how God was working there. Now, David's still got some challenges ahead of him. He knows that. He knows that going there for 10 weeks did not do away with what happened here before he left here. He understands all that. That was part of the process of the last few weeks you were there. I think that God was really working your heart. Look, doesn't undo the consequences of my actions, and those things are still real. But he's probably better at peace with it than many of us would be. But it was just amazing to see how God used him. We found out something about him, though, Cindy. He can lead music. Tell them about your last week there. Tell them why you're there. You're like why it was the last week, because there was 3 of you that started.
Yeah, I came in with 2 other guys. One was actually a preacher.
Did you hear what he said? He was a preacher.
It's a word of God.
Well, seminary. I mean, he was a different denomination pastor than we are, but he was an evangelical pastor that got hooked on that jump.
But it was our fifth week, something like that. The preacher ended up talking one of the younger guys into doing a crazy no-no that it'll flip you out to kind of hear what they did and how they made it. But needless to say, they got drunk. They both got kicked out. I went to my last classmate that was still there and said, you know, what's going on? They hung pretty close together. I stayed pretty much to myself. But next thing I know, I go to bed. This was all happening Sunday. Woke up Monday morning, found out he got kicked out that night. Had some prescription meds brought in. It was his dad that actually brought him in. And it really wouldn't have been a problem because they were his pills. And although he didn't go the way he should have, what got him was that he had them down in the yard truck and that turned medicine into a drug, and he got booted out. So everybody started messing with me because they knew that even though I was 3 weeks out, I was going to be the only one. Most classes were 4 or 5 guys. But that last week, you end up running all the services. You morning chapel. We start off. We have to sing 3 or 4 songs. I'll go up on up to the altar. I'll do. I was reading Proverbs because I was a boss at that at the time. So I'd read one of the Proverbs for that day. Then we do Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. We had prayer requests, and I would lead that. We'd sing a couple songs, then. We'd listen to preaching. Then we'd end it with a couple songs. And every service throughout the week, the long ones were Tuesdays and Thursdays. We had to be there at 6:20, even though the pastor didn't get there till 7, and you had 40 minutes of 35 guys singing. it's rough. For so many weeks, I listened to just silence and half the guys not singing, and I called them all out. I had them. We had a good time that last week. We were shouting.
Yeah. Tell us. It's a funny story again. I was kind of like he was telling me about when we went about the bowls. You said they dropped 1,000-word essays on some guys about bowls they had in the rooms.
Yeah. We were having Hungarian goulash one night for supper, and you don't want to know what's in that, but there was like 6 or 7 of us still left in the line, and they ran out of bowls, and so we ended up having these plastic bowls, and that didn't work out well. But anyways, they made an announcement saying that, you know, people are taking bowls back to the room, eating cereal, whatever the case may be. And they gave them all a warning that by the time we went to chapel service that evening, that everything needed to be back. And they weren't kidding, because when we went to chapel service, we were wondering what took so long for the pastor to get there. But they were room searching. And there's like three or four guys got 1,000-word essays on the book of James.
On the book of James.
That's a rough one, too.
I don't know if you heard him to start with. When you're there, you have to memorize 70 verses, one verse a day. Some of those verses were not John 3:16. Some of them were three or four verses, a part of a passage, in order for you to get the whole context. It just so happened, this just fell this way. Every time I visited him, he said, well, this is my verse for today. I said, I know that one. I quote it. And he kind of looked at me funny. Then I looked. I was glad I wasn't there some of the days, because some of them I didn't know myself. So I was really good. But it was good to go up and visit him and see what God is doing there. And it'll always be a special place to you, I'm sure. But I talked to him a little bit about my last days there with him. Look, David, they love to see you come. They love to see you go. You've got to come off the mountain. We got home. There's been some more challenges. I told you that. We're not going to get into all that tonight. That's not what I want to do. But I told Elizabeth when we got home, I said, now the biggest challenge is now to start putting this thing back together. Well, we're in the ditch. We're about as low as we can go. So we got to get started back. How are we going? We're going to need to find a job of some kind. And I told him on Monday, I think it was, or Tuesday, I can't remember, one of those days. You can put me as a reference. I'm willing to put my name and my reputation on the line for you right now.
I quickly called other people, too.
You're not doing what I said. Cut his microphone off when he starts saying nonsense. Tell him about the job. Tell him about how that worked out. God things.
Yeah, it was all God moments. It was a crazy weekend. I think we got home at midnight Saturday from Boone. Church Sunday evening was even more interesting. Monday, I had to go to court Monday morning. So Tuesday was my first free day that I could actually start looking for a job. That kind of got held back just due to some family things. But Scott, meanwhile, was putting some plugs in on things that he saw going around. But thanks to Gay putting in a ploy, I got a job. I think it was Wednesday, or it might have been Wednesday or Thursday, up there at Glass and Window Warehouse. First thing she said when I came in was, it's not much, and to not worry about his mouth, this guy's language. I'm grateful. I'm giving it my all, and I'm going to make a run at it, and I'm glad to be working. But yeah, to come back and land a job in a couple of days, it's definitely a God moment, so I'm blessed on that.
It's been an interesting journey for sure. We're not great happy that the journey happened this way. Certainly, if we could undo some time, we would probably would go back and undo some of that stuff. But we're grateful for the time at Hebron. He has some pictures I think he wants to show you.
I do have pictures also, if anybody's got any questions.
Do you have questions for him? We'll take some questions from the floor.
That's it. No questions.
David, when did you realize that you made that turn?
Which turn are you talking about?
Addiction. Probably when I started hiding stuff from Mel, when I started snatching money out of the accounts or whatnot. That was probably it. When I started realizing the things I were doing to say get my fix or whatnot, I'd have never thought in a million years I'd have done. You know, and you get that feeling. You know it's wrong. Again. One of the crazy things is, if anybody's been in that position or does any wrong in their life, you have those cry outs to God. You know, God, if you see me through this one more time, I promise I won't do this. You know, and they tell you a lot about that when you're up there at Hebron. But it was during those moments when I realized the things I was doing. Yeah. Huh? Yeah, having cuffs done on you, that broke me. Yeah.
Are there others?
I'm not scared of anything. I mean, throw something at me.
How much time were you able to spend with male boys?
The boys were able to come up on week 5 and then graduation week.
How much time the weekends?
What'd
your weekends look like when you had family there? I guess that's the
question.
When
family was there, we worked till 11:30. Visitation started at 12.
On Saturday.
You were allowed visitation from 12 to 10 that night, but you still had your chapel services and stuff.
Talk about the accommodations for Melody and like what you were not allowed to do.
Yeah, we had little rental properties that you'll see in the slides, but you weren't allowed to even go near the doors. I mean, if she had a bunch of luggage, you'd call a staff member or something to put it in her room. We couldn't go into rooms. There was always somebody patrolling the property because, I didn't trust 3/4 of the guys that were there. So most of the time when Melody got there, we'd shoot down to the campground, down to the river or something, and just park and talk the whole time. But it was good time, but it went by like crazy. I'd usually leave her at the truck or at her spot while I went up for the cattle call and got counted every time. Those were mandatory. You had to get counted every time. And you didn't have to eat, but you just had to be counted, and then you could leave again.
There was Melody.
But that helped. Weekends helped because that was your deadest time because that first weekend you're there and you're brand new and there's nothing really to do on weekends other than wait for the chapel services. You're just looking at all the other visitation and all the other families and this and that. So weekends were slow.
Melody would take him food.
Lynch Chapel. Y'all with the care packages, I told Jody this. I mean, I mean this in a very joking way, but if I wanted to take a hit out on somebody on that mountain, I just had to give one of those little loaves of bread. and it would have worked, but they knew my room. They knew the bottom drawer of my dresser was the stash of food. So it got a lot of my chores done for me.
Oh my!
It's the only way I could spend more time with Mel on the weekends because with trash, you work 7 days. I mean, you're always going to be trash. And needless to say, I'd have guys doing my trash on the weekends. So.
Hey, it's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful facility. Me and Ethan went up on a week and a half or so in, and I was trying to just let him see a friendly face and a familiar face because I knew that he could have no outside contact. And he could earn, you heard what I'm saying, a 5-minute phone call. Right?
Yeah.
But you didn't get that automatically. The last week he was there, he could have more phone calls and more contact. But up to that point, there's very limited, right? Even during the week.
Yeah, I think they let me call you. It was in starting my second week. I'd already seen Scott and Ethan.
He was happy about seeing me.
Ethan blessed me. But that's actually when the cards really started rolling in. You're there. There's no contact, no nothing. I remember, the biggest prayer. And that's another thing about being there was, one of my goals. When we got there, we had to write goals we wanted to accomplish. I knew what I wanted. Get to it here. And they were pretty spot on. I told them I wanted to have a better every moment of the day prayer life. I always felt like I was weak at that. Capitalize on those moments in the car, capitalize pushing your lawnmower, you know, just talking to God. And I wanted that. I wanted to be able to work myself back into my ministries, the ministries here at church. It says to turn back and walk daily with the Lord, to pray and ask and have God open doors for a job when I got home, to be shown the way of letting go of my wrongdoings, making amends, to have that fire I once had again and get it back to the ministries, and to become and have a stronger every moment prayer life. When you're cut off from everybody and you can't make those phone calls, the only time you were allowed phone calls was on Saturdays and Sundays. You quickly realized all you had was prayer. And it was amazing how God would work those prayers for you. I think it was the Wednesday you guys came. That morning, it was my third or fourth morning, whatever, there. And I was praying for, I didn't know what was going on at home. I didn't know the condition of my family, making sure they were all right. But it was funny because I no more made that prayer. Got my first card that morning. It was after you guys left, so it was a Thursday morning prayer. Got my first card from the adult men's Sunday school class. And then after that, it was, that was the last time I had to do that prayer. Cards came every day. But it was anything. I remember Mel would, they knew when Mel called that they were either going to keep the message from me or go ahead and let me talk to her. But the things that I couldn't control while I was there that I had to pray about that worked their way out, themselves out. When she came up there that weekend, she told me those things were fine, and so yeah, it taught me prayer. Prayer works.
Are there other questions? You, within some reach, he'll answer any question you have.
Yeah, I'll answer anything. Only reason I wouldn't answer most of those kids around, so.
That's what I said, within some reason. Show me your slides.
All right.
If you're ready. Who's, are you done? Ask a question. Ready, Matt?
I don't know what order I've got these things in. This is right when you pull in the entrance coming up the mountain.
You want to stand out here, Dave? Or you
no, I'm good. Of course, up there at the top is our chapel, but that's the sign leading up to the chapel. Melody loves that little hill right there leading to that chapel. But it's called the House of Miracles, the Mountain of Miracles. Go ahead. That's just another quick up sign. That's the Hebron House. That's where I stayed. The top two windows up there, those were four-man rooms. The bottom on the left-hand side was a four-man room. Right-hand side was four-man. I'm actually around the back side. Go ahead. This is me heading towards the back side of my room. There's actually a deck right here I'm going to go around, but this is looking back at some of the property heading up the top of the mountain. Those are rentals right there. Go ahead. That's what they called the wood shop apartment. One of the staff members lived there. But yeah, was, again, just some photos. This is heading back to my room. It's one of the four-man rooms there, but I'm all the way down here at the end, going into the laundry room, and that window there is actually in my room. Why I put this one in this order, I don't know. I'm standing at the end of my balcony to go in my room, but looking down, heading to the ball field, the garden, heading out to the river and all that goes down that hill. And that's my room, loaded up with pictures. My stack of Moon's Chapel cards were there, but it was a small room. I guess size-wise, wall-to-wall, that was probably 10, 11 feet. I'd say more like 11 feet wall-to-wall, and then length-wise, it was probably about 14-foot run, and we had just the little bathroom right there in front of me. That door there led into the other guy's room. I think my next one is, yeah, that was known as the stash drawer right there. That had all my snacks. So I used to store a lot of the clothes up on top, but that was our clothes spot. This is leaving the Hebron house, and the entrance is right over here. That's the auto shop right there. I made the mistake of saying what I did later on in my journey there. So my last 2 weeks, I worked a lot there on that box truck right there. Got to put an engine in that thing. So that was fun, but go ahead. That's, again, just looking at that shot. That's the chapel. Worship was at the top. Rentals were, and some staff members were at the second level. Again, here I go, heading back down the mountain. That barn you see right there is called the Bargain Barn. It was where a lot of the stuff that was at the thrift stores that we could use on the mountain was stored at. That's just a little bit further. I just turned and looked off the side. That's the pond that we got to fish at. It wasn't a big pond. You kind of named the fish you caught because you're going to catch them again. And you did. You caught some that still had hooks in them and stuff. But that little house back there, that was called the River House. Mel loves that one on the end there. She got bit up there. But that one slept 11. The other one slept 13. And there's some of the guys out there playing horseshoes. And that's the pavilion right beside the pond. The water treatment plant's that building you see back up there in the corner. But that pavilion ain't too old. That's still the same area. I'm starting to look out at the garden and our barns and stuff are over there on the corner. And a lot of our donated vehicles sit over there, some of the winter vehicles and stuff. Another shot of the garden. I'm actually up on somebody's property right now. That's the main road there, but looking back at the ball field. There's another shot of the ball field. I did put a couple up on the roadbed for us. That's our garden. When I got there, they were seeding it. We were planting it. When I left, they were out there taking it all up. So it was really just corn, squash, beans. Potatoes were on the other side of the ball field, but they sold it in abundance. I mean, the pastors would come in and say, we need 15 bushels of beans, and that meant there was a lot of guys and some of the other work crews that were getting pulled off and put in the garden that day to get them all picked. This is heading down to the river. That exit right there, there's a house up here on the mountain that they own. It actually belongs to one of the guys that does a lot of the prison ministries. He goes around, does all them, but he lives up there. That's one of the shots of the river coming through. A lot of trout. We weren't allowed to touch that river. That was an automatic ticket home if you did. A couple guys got caught hiding behind a rock and swimming, and they got their ticket home. But they stocked it quite regularly. This is back up Hebron House that I lived at. It's behind that wall. This is looking at inside our gym. That's why I'm looking for Ethan in a little while. Go ahead. This is kind of standing back and looking back in. We had free weights behind that wall there, our pool table. Then the ping pong table and, of course, a carpeted basketball court. It was fun. You could play, but, man, you got rug burn if you fell. This is now back up. I showed you pictures of the backsides of all this stuff, and the chapel's right here on our side, but those are two rentals. Mel stayed there majority of the time. That was called Paul and Silas, and Peter was back behind it. That house up there at the top is Barnabas. I had a little old lady there, Miss Marion. She kind of runs the thrift stores and has no problem telling you how she feels about certain people there. And you had to be on her good side. Yeah. She's the one that actually helped me get some flowers made for our anniversary when Mel came up. This is at the top of the mountain. This is what they call Dillard Hall. Up there at the very top where you see that exhaust fan, that's the long hallway that housed 23 of the guys. There was 11 down at mine. They had it rough. That's an old hallway. There was you'd have a bedroom with two guys, and they'd share the one bathroom. And they tend to keep the younger guys up there. There was a couple guys that got kicked out. They would sneak out those top windows up onto that roof and smoke after hours. You had to be in your room at 10:30 and lights out at 11. I think the next shot just shows this side. That white truck, that was my trash truck. It was a rust bucket, but it got me, kept me from walking a lot. This is the day room. This is where we would meet during mandatory movies. We'd meet here every morning for muster to find out what jobs were being done, what needed to be fixed and all. You got a couple extended student rooms down there and a couple of maintenance offices right there. This is coming up. That was the first floor. This is coming into the second floor. It's our kitchen. This starts our dining room. You're starting to head towards the offices and the lobby. This here, that's known as the graduation table. You'll see another pic. But
explain to them about the tables, David.
You actually start all the way in that back corner on your first week. And as the weeks progress, depending right there, every week that goes by, your little name block kind of gets moved and you do this little S thing until you get up there to the graduation table. So that helped. I mean, the further you saw yourself going through the tables there, the closer you knew you were getting to going home. So I'm just looking back at the kitchen there.
David, someone want to know if you set the table by yourself.
No, I was given the okay, but I let my 9-week guys that were behind me come up there with me. Notice the 94 score, a bunch of guys knocking out a sanitation grade of 94. This is our deck. That was actually completed April of this year. It was just this tar roof deal with metal poles, and it didn't extend out. And it had like a gray slate, but they put in some walk-in coolers up underneath all that and walk-in freezers, and they said it was about $350,000 for the project. So that got finished in April. So that was nice. I mean, it's the only unfortunate thing was during the weekends when visitation came. If it was raining, everybody was up there underneath that shelter, and except for us, we'd stay in the truck and hide from them, so, because it got busy up there. This is looking at the lobby. You got to remember, I mean, the pictures kind of make the place look good. It was almost 70 years old, so it's not as immaculate as it looks, but that's our lobby. The guy in the center, that's Edgar Dillard. He started it all. They were all Presbyterian. The director that's there now, and the pastors are the First Baptist ones to run the place, all Fruitland guys, so I was excited about that. This is coming out of that day room, that hallway, leading towards the chapel. It was a rough walk every morning at 7 o'clock, because you'd either have to come up that one side or start at the bottom and come all the way up for breakfast. And your legs didn't want that first thing in the morning. That's just looking back out. You can see Hebron House is all the way in that far corner of the gym and all that. That's walking back down to the chapel. That's the hill. That was the little logo on the back side of that Hebron Colony Ministries. They would always tell us that stuff, to believe, belong, behave. That's inside the chapel. It's a couple of our students. They were putting in some microphones and stuff, but it really bellowed inside that place. Is it? Well, that's the chapel. That's Huron Colony right there. Spent a lot of time in that chapel.
From those pictures, do you have any questions for David? I think going forward, obviously, you feel like that's a thing. Basically, one of the big things they taught there was that you're not defined by an addiction.
They tell you when you get there, they don't care what you came there for because they knew that God brought you there. So they told you that whatever the addiction was, whatever the problem was, it was on the other side of the river when you come up on the mountain. It was taught as sin. It was spoke about as sin. So there wasn't any crack users or meth users or alcoholics. It was just a bunch of guys that had some serious sin in their life, and that's how it was taught, and that's how it was just nailed into you. So, when I realized that it was okay to hate sin, it was all right.
It's been an interesting journey for sure. If you have more questions, David and Mel will be happy to answer this. Mel talked a little bit about the struggles from her side. She goes on the weekends and hears the good stuff, but David's not having to deal with the schoolwork and the home. But now he's back to doing that, so he's back to reality. So he'll have some challenges still to overcome, but, the fact is that, I want you to hear me, David was not court-ordered to go there. Melody never told him, I'm going to leave you if you don't go there. David chose to go there because he recognized he needed help.
That's just the men's ministry. There is a women's one. It used to be a mile from that place, but reasons being it ain't. But it's down in, they actually got a women's facility down in Sandy Cooper.
South Carolina.
South Carolina, yeah.
They operate on faith. It's good. I met Lee Pig went to Fruitland with their director, so they kind of, so we know some mutual people.
I met a lot of guys from Mike Whitson's church that do some outreach ministries and evangelism that come through there.
It's interesting. It's a God thing. We're grateful for what God's done in your life. I really am. I'm excited about the days that are ahead. The question in some of your mind is he going to go back to doing everything he was doing here? The short answer to that is no. He knows that. He's got to earn that again. He had to start over again with me too. I'm not mad at him. We're not mad. But you got to prove to me again and to us here again, the leadership, the powers to be, that we are doing what we're supposed to do. But me and him talked about this weeks ago, and he'll tell you this, that he had some other fish to fry when he got home before wanting to serve here. He had to get back to reestablish some things at home, some home life and different things. The long answer is yes, he can serve again. But in the short term, no, he cannot. We love them. We've tried to help them through this journey. It was kind of interesting. David, you remember saying this. I don't know if it really helped me. You said to someone, why would you not want to be a part of this church as good as we've been, the people who've been to you? That's a testament to you, not to me. That's awesome. You guys have been awesome to stick with them and help them.
Everybody there knew. They knew who Moon's Chapel was.
So that's really good.
A lot of guys live vicariously through those cards there too, so.
Sure. But
the kids, Karen and Gay and y'all for letting them kids write cards. I'd have four or five other guys going, I'm crying and I don't even know why I'm crying. they're not even our kids, but you see a four-year-old write the get well and love you and stuff like that, it'll cut you down.
God's been good. We're grateful for what he's done. There's other things he could tell you, but we're just about to run out of time. We don't want to keep you here all night. But I am grateful for what God's done in your life, David. I'm optimistic, and God's going to use him in the days ahead. And continue to pray for him. Mel, though, has some challenges ahead still, but nothing that the Lord can't overcome. You get this far, I mean, too.
You want me to? I can bust out a couple memory verses real quick.
Do you remember them all?
Yeah, I got them.
What's the hardest one you hadn't heard?
Deuteronomy 30:19-20.
I don't have any idea what that one says.
I call I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you. I set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice. I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you. I set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice, that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them.
You had 24 hours to learn that.
Or it was essay time. None. I went through it with all A's on my room, no essays. I took it serious.
He has an exit interview. The only rule he broke was?
I walked out with dip in my mouth still a couple times. They didn't catch me, but I admitted to it. When you go in the smoke pit for 5 minutes before and you put a dip in, it's just habit to just keep on walking. And I confessed, but... It's redemption. It's in my head. I know where I want to go. I got to get us. I'm gonna get the family back where we were before I did all my stuff. So I gotta. I know that's God's short term will for my life is to get that stuff back in order. I still pray and know that He'll show me the long term will for my life, but right now it's redemption. It's getting things right again.
Any other questions for him?
Did you ever think the mail would drive up there all that time?
I was a worried fool on Saturdays. If she happened to stop off somewhere, and you know, I wouldn't know, you know, but I knew that at 12:30, 12:35, I should see my truck rolling in, so that extra 30, 45 minutes, because she was, you know, doing something, you know, that was worry.
There's a sign up that says, when you walk in to visit, there's a sign up when you sign in, Melody might see this, under no circumstances, and no is bolded and capitalized, are the rest that's here to use cell phones. Under no circumstances.
Yes, yeah, so if I talked to you, Mel was holding the phone in my mouth. You know?
Like one day I showed David a picture of a text that Melody sent me of a picture of the boys. He said, I can't let them see me holding that, but I want to look at it. But because he could get in trouble for even holding my cell phone. And, it was a text picture. Got other questions? We're not trying to keep you here. If you have questions, it's been an exciting time to see what God's done in your life. I hate we had to go through the journey, but we're grateful for the journey. And, Hebron Colony is a special place. The cool thing is that David talked to Chad about a possible ministry. As Chad meets people, sometimes not in good places, in ours, where he can sponsor guys now and go back. He's probably right now not in a position financially to be able to help a lot of guys, people go there, but he can sponsor them to get them there and say, look, there's hope. Melody threatened to leave him since she was his sponsor. But here's the bottom line. There's hope in the gospel. The gospel changes people, and if it doesn't, we've all misunderstood the gospel. We're grateful for what God's done and what God's going to continue to do. I'm excited about the days that are ahead. Certainly there's been way too many God moments getting you to here tonight, for I don't think that God's not ordered some steps. But everybody done?
I love everybody.
And periodically, some of you done things for Melody. There was gift cards that was sent in the mail that was without addresses. There was money put in her bank account without her knowing where that come from. Life went on here for Melody and the boys. We recognize that as a church as well. Not that we didn't care about David, because clearly you did, but David's biggest concern in leaving was home. So now things are, he's back home and we're working again. And so we're excited about the days that are ahead. But you have any other questions? Last call.